part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
Cool. Well, thank you for coming on to my podcast. I do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Are we live right now?
We're not live. No, oh, no. Okay. This is all recorded. Listen, yeah, don't get fancy, man. We could barely hook up via Skype. You want to talk live? Yeah, let's go to caller number one on the line. Right. Yeah, no, it's not.
Oh, this isn't that kind of podcast?
No, this is not that kind
the
of
podcast. The hell did Rylan Grant sign me up for?
I don't know. Well, we should thank Rylan Grant for connecting us.
Yeah.
He is a gentleman that put us into touch with one another so that people know who I am and who you are. My name is Christian Horn, and this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. And you are Stephen Prince.
And that's right.
You are the creator of, quite honestly, what is one of my favorite comic book discoveries in the past, I don't know how long. I actually really enjoyed this book. The book is called Monster Matador. I didn't know what to expect when Ryland said, like, oh yeah, I've got this friend and he's got a comic and stuff like that. You just never know sort of what to expect. And and then you sent me the books, and I finally sat down and started reading them several days ago, and I was like, this is great, this is fun stuff. So why don't you tell the people, the not live listening people, the recorded, listening to the recorded podcast, why don't you tell the people what Monster Matador is about?
Monster Matador is, at its core, it's essentially about a father who's trying to make the world a better place for his daughter. Mm-hmm. And it's, but of course it's told in a post-apocalyptic setting. Mm-hmm. And in regards to making the world a better place, he's fighting kaiju monsters. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of told, I think Ryland sort of described it as like Danny McBride and Jody Hill made a Santo movie and peed on it, which is a pretty good description. It's got hints of a telenovela. It's very overdramatic. One of my big inspirations for it is a kind of not such a well-known Peter Sellers film. Mm-hmm. In which he plays, it's called The Bobo, and he plays Juan Bautista, who is the greatest singing matador in all of Spain.
Really? I don't think I've ever seen that one.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun movie. And I'm a big Peter Sellers fan. So
sure.
That sort of that type of humor, that tone is definitely what I'm always kind of going for.
Wow. Yeah. Essentially it is about a matador who fights monsters in post-apocalyptic Mad Max kind of world. Let me ask you the question. Are you Latino, or are you Latinx, or whatever we're calling ourselves, these Latinx? are you of Hispanic origins?
I am not.
You are not. Oh, okay.
I am not. So the origin of the of the title, I've always been kind of mesmerized by the whole pageantry and the what you call the poetry and the almost the movement, the dance of the matador, just the way they pose and the way they kind of the cape and the sword, it's very powerful presentation.
Uh-huh.
I used to do these exercises for writing and whatnot, and kind of set a challenge for myself. And I was feeling, I guess, really pretentious one day, and I said, I want to create something that's sort of iconic, or, that's just, identifiable, you know what I mean? Something just, mm-hmm. basic, and the name just popped into my head, Monster Matador.
Okay, yeah.
And it was great. I actually did an ash can many, many years ago. It's kind of the first iteration of Monster Matador. And I'm a big Three Stooges fan as well. And it was kind of like a Three Stooges type of humor, you know? And obviously that's changed since then. My ex at the time is Mexican. Mm-hmm. And she kind of encouraged me to, I wasn't really drawing at the time, and she kind of encouraged me to draw. She was an artist, and she wound up inking that initial, I think, six page story. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where it started, you know?
Sure, sure. And so, I mean, have you ever been to a bullfight? Have you ever like seen a bullfight? Or
I haven't. I you know, with my ex, we go down to Mexico because we always meant to go. She was meant to take me, but it just never lined up. And I, you know, but it's one of those things that's you know on my bucket list. Or
yeah, I saw one when I lived in South America for a year. I am Latinx or
Latino, half,
and I lived in Colombia for a year, and I was a little kid, probably like fourth grade or something like that, and we lived there for a year, and it was really funny because it's the sort of thing that, you know, I was a kid and they told me like exactly like what it was all about, and you're going to go and there's going to be this guy and they fight a bull and, you know, they're going to stab the bull and it's all about killing the bull. And as a little kid, I was like, screw that. I was like, no, absolutely not. Like, I was like, no, I don't want the animal to get hurt. And then you go and they, obviously you're a kid, so you get dragged along.
Right.
My parents or whatever adults were with me, dragged me along, and you're watching this thing, and it's very sort of like weird because I remember getting wrapped up in it and like being like, oh my God. Like, and by the end of the thing, it's just like the primal, like Lord of the Flies, like reptilian brain thing takes over, and you're just like, kill the bull.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And I mean, it's the whole. I mean, I've seen bullfights. I haven't been physically, but I mean, the whole. I mean, they got the guys on the horses that lead. I mean, it's a whole show. You know, it's not just like, I think that's, you know, it's not just the guy stabbing a bull. It's a whole production, and that's part of it, but I mean it is pretty, you do just get kind of caught up in it because there's a rhythm to it that just, at least, you know, it's mesmerizing, you know, once you stop and think about it, it's a little it's so funny because
I mean, it really is sort of like, I mean, it's in a way, and not to insult anybody's culture or anything like that, but there is like a savagery to it and like primal. And it's just, I remember just, and you see the blood, like, I mean, you're there. So they're like, you know, and as a kid, I remember just being kind of shocked and horrified.
Yeah.
But you're right. It is sort of very ceremonial. There is like a tradition to it and all this stuff. And by the end, you're just all wrapped up in it. And it's
a reflection of, you know, of human nature in a way, of, you know, of our primal nature. And, you know, we can make excuses for it or whatever, but I mean, it's clear. It's a very, obviously these days, especially, it's a very controversial thing, but.
Yeah. I've heard that, you know, certain countries have tried to shut it down or thought about shutting the practice down, but it's, so once the sort of like title pops into your head and you're like Monster Matador, I'm assuming, like where do you go from there? Cause I mean, sort of like as a writer, I mean, I know that, you know, for me, I mean, for me as like an artist and stuff like that, usually the drawing or the idea like pops into my head and then I come up with a name later on. But so you're saying, you had said earlier on, A, that you weren't necessarily an artist, but B, sort of like the name popped in your head. Were you trying to think of ideas? Were you like, oh, I want to create a comic or a story? And, or were you just like hanging out one day and the name just like popped in your head? Like, how did the creative process sort of begin?
So I used to draw, you know.
Oh, okay.
And then I kind of stopped for a while. I mean, I focused on the writing.
Sure.
And at the time, if I remember correctly, this is like 10 years ago. I was getting back into comics because I had introduced her to there's Paul Pope comics.
Oh yeah, hell yeah!
I'm a huge Paul Pope fan.
Me too. Yeah, he's amazing.
I've met him a few times.
Oh, you have? Oh
yeah,
wow.
He's really a really nice guy. But anyway, so I was getting back into it, and I used to do in college. I used to do these little zines that I used to put out. I'd had some notoriety, you know, I had a,
you mean a zine?
Yeah. Sorry, a zine.
No, it's okay.
I always call them zines. I don't know why.
Do you really? But, that's so
yeah,
funny. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It could be zine. I don't know.
Just I've to always... be corrected. I don't know.
you want to see who the other person, if the person's a big enough a-hole to
right,
correct
yeah,
you. Is that
exactly.
I am that person.
This interview is over.
How dare you? Skype problems. And now this, what kind of operation is this?
But, you know, so I had been at the time, so I probably moved, I just after I moved to LA, and like everybody, you know, I moved to LA to write screenplays and whatever.
Like everybody. That's
like everybody
funny.
Else. Either yeah. that or be a producer, you know.
Yeah,
which,
or an actor. Or
an actor or whatever. Yeah, but yeah. I was just kind of messing around. I think I was writing novels at the time. That was, you know, I just on a lark, you know, just like I said, just like as an exercise, and the thing popped into my head, and I didn't really do much with it except for this kind of 6-page story. And you know, at the time there was no really, I don't even think there was like Deviant Art, or it wasn't like people weren't necessarily connecting with artists as easily as they do now.
Sure, sure.
And the ease of putting out a product. I mean, this is like 10 years ago or whatnot. I mean, if you did a comic, there was no Comixology or whatever to put it on, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't really a motivation for me to do it. And, you know,
did you go to conventions or any of that stuff? Or did you know about conventions? Or?
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. I knew about conventions and all that stuff. I was working, I think right after that, I started working in the toy industry for a while.
Okay.
And I kind of, I had been doodling on it. I had done another kind of full length story that I did just to get to drawing again, just to kind of get back into it. And that one was more in line with the tone of Monster Matador as it is now. Mm-hmm. And it was essentially Monster Matador. It was influenced. I was a very big Alejandro Jodorowsky fan.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was basically, you know, Monster Matador versus, you know, El Topo.
Okay.
So who is the best, you know, monster fighter or whatever.
Sure.
So anyway, so that was the next iteration of it. And then a few years later, I got laid off or whatnot, and I didn't have anything to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, you know, I've got time to draw. I've got all these ideas. And I wound up doing a comic strip called Unemployant.
Okay.
And then I did a and then I did this 200 page science fiction. It was a 9-issue series graphic novel called The Third.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
I've never heard of it.
I mean, it's on Comixology. It's well written. It was the arts, you know, it's okay.
But so you drew it as well?
Yeah, I drew it.
Okay.
It was one of those things where I was like, I had this script and, you know, trying to get it published and all that stuff was just, and I, you know, I had the time. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to sit down. I'm going to draw a couple pages. There's no way I'm ever going to be able to do this. You know, this was the crazy science fiction. I'd never drawn anything like it before. It was spaceships, it was like all this intrigue and different worlds and all this crazy stuff in it. And what happened was I kept drawing, I would draw a page and then I drew another page, and you know, by the time I was finished, you know, I was basically finished with it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh wow, you know, I did I did, you know, 200 page, whatever, you know, graphic novel. And, and then I was like, well, I've got this Monster Matador thing. And that's when I was like, okay, let me get serious about it. Let me actually, you know, figure out what it is.
Wait, a 200-page graphic novel isn't serious about it? That sounds pretty serious.
Yeah, this is how just stupid I am. You
know, okay.
I was talking to David Schrader.
Yes, my friend David Schrader, Baby Badass.
Baby Badass. He was at Heidi Ho for
Free Comic Day.
The comic book day. I was talking to him about, oh, I never get anything done. I'm, you know, I'm way behind and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, shut up, you know? So that's where Monster Matador basically, you know, and I kind of sat down and said, okay, how can I do this? How can I make it like something that's, you know, doable? And I came out with about a 50 issue outline.
Oh, wow.
Broken into 4 volumes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm at right now. That's what I'm doing. So,
yeah. Yeah. And so when you started this, you said like, did you start Monster Matador like 10 years ago? Is that what you said?
No. This one I started in 2015.
Sure.
And, okay. So this is like the stuff that's out now, like Monster Matadors, everyone knows it, whatever. It started 2015. And it was coming out monthly, and then I had a kid.
That'll do it. Yeah.
And that screwed everything up. And
so you had it on a monthly schedule, like in 2015?
Yeah, the first 5 issues came out, I think, every month.
Oh, wow. Really?
Uh-huh.
And did you have them coming? How were you selling them? Were they through Diamond?
I was just doing it through Comixology.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you were doing them digitally and not necessarily print.
Right.
Okay.
It was coming out monthly. I had a kid.
Yeah.
And it just kind of threw everything out of whack. There were some things we went through with him that kind of put me in a rut. And it was actually Ryland who contacted me. I think it was maybe a year and a half. Afterwards, we were in a class at Meltdown together.
Yeah, the Meltdown Comics.
And everything that had happened, I kind of fell off the face of the earth and lost touch. And he invited me out of nowhere to do a panel. He was doing a panel at Long Beach.
Yeah.
A publishing panel. And I was kind of like, man, I haven't done anything in a year and a half. I'm not really kind of into it. I had drawn, I think, Monster Matador number 6 was the one I was on, but I just wasn't. And I thought it over, and I agreed, you know, I agreed to be on the panel, and it kind of lit the fire under me again, I guess.
Oh, I got you. So wait, let me ask you this: when Ryland, and how did you and Ryland know each other? Just through writing?
Yeah, we both took a class at Meltdown Comics.
Oh, okay. So you met at the Made at Meltdown, like
And
that's Jim Higgins' class, right?
Jim Higgins.
And so, was it still digitally published, or was it? Had you decided to make the jump to print at that point? Because you have them in print, correct?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's mostly digital.
Okay.
Part of the challenge I'm having right now is, the second kid threw me off again.
Sure.
So, but I'm back on track, back on schedule.
Sure.
Kids will do that to you.
Oh, I know it. Yes, I know it. Although I only have one, and she's older now. So,
right. But yeah.
And you sounds like you have a baby.
I've got a 10-month-old and a 3.5 year old.
Oh man, you're in it. You are in it.
Yeah. And it's amazing. I actually, you know, I have to find time to do this stuff.
Oh yeah, no, I know it. I mean, I have a webcomic that I started in 2014,
right.
And I still haven't finished the first chapter. I mean,
oh wow.
So yeah. You know, but part of the thing of the interviews that I do here, I interview a lot of like indie artists, you know what I mean? And The thing that sort of like gets you a little respectability in the comics community, obviously, it's like, oh, if you're doing on a regular schedule and blah, 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 you know, and it comes out every month and stuff like that. And but I've interviewed a lot of indie creators, some people that only put out like a book a year or whatever. The thing that sort of keeps coming up is like, dude, just do it when it happens. Like you'll get it done. Just, you know, stick to it. And you know, it may take years and years or whatever. And, you know, I mean,
you can't kill yourself.
Yeah. You can't kill yourself. There's, you know, there's day jobs, there's family stuff. And, and that's the thing is like, sometimes me, myself, like I feel embarrassed. I'm like, oh my God, I started drawing this thing in 2014. And, you know, and that's just initially because of the fact that
I mean, that is kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, no, it's totally embarrassing. I'm completely embarrassed by it. No, but I mean, that's sort of like when you start noodling with the idea, right? And then you're like, maybe I'll do this, maybe I won't. And then, you know, I was helping Dave with Baby Badass and stuff like that. And, you know, not getting very far on that. So it sounds like you and I are a little bit in the same boat. I mean, you have something like 10 or 11 issues in you know, you know, that's the sort of thing that I just keep hearing a lot from a lot of indie artists is like, I did one issue or, you know, the interview that really blew my hair back was, Javier Hernandez. He does El Muerto. Okay, and I think he'd only done one issue of El Muerto when he got like people interested in making a movie about it. And it was like just his like indie book. And he had, you know, and it took him years to do another one or a while to do another one. And it was just like, oh, you know, like that for me sort of made me go, you know what? I'm just going to do it when I can do it. So I don't think you need to beat yourself up at all. You know what I mean? I mean, you've got like 10 issues of this and it sounds like you and Ryland are working on another project as well. This sort of a Batman? Can I say Batman? Can I say like a parody?
It's a parody. It's basically a Mad Magazine take on. It's called Tales from the World of Monster Matador.
Yeah.
And it's basically our celebrity parody title.
Yeah.
Ryland's a brilliant writer. He does a book called Aberrant.
Yeah, Aberrant.
Which is great. He has a new one coming out. I'm going to pimp him out right now. It's called Banjax.
Yeah.
And it's coming out in June.
Yep.
His publisher described it, and it's pretty good description as Death Wish meets Watchmen. Ryland and I, we're in a little group. We read each other's scripts and whatnot. Banjax I read, I think a couple of years ago, the first few issues, and they're amazing. So I'm really looking forward to that one.
That's cool.
But he's a big Monster Matador booster. And part of the fun with Monster Matador, one of the things I did in its issues, I think it's 8 through 10, the ones that just came out, was I took a look at what are the Monster Matador sort of makes his way to there's an SOS coming from Santa Monica. Because a monster has come on the beach, and Monster Matador, he makes his way to Santa Monica to help fight the monster, and you kind of think to yourself, you know, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, all these guys in the post-apocalypse, right? What are they doing? And you figure if there's monsters, they've everybody's kind of like a little kind of like, you know, has some kind of PTSD or trauma from, you know, just living in this kind of world. And they've all kind of like just assumed their movie personalities.
They've kind of snapped.
And are fighting this monster. And
it's very funny. Yeah.
You know, Harrison Ford is the pilot who keeps crashing planes, and it was a lot of fun to do. But there was a scene in there where a broken Christian Bale is on the roof of Nakatomi with Michael Caine, and they're overlooking just like, you know, the damaged city. And Bale is in full Batman gear, and he's obviously very bitter that he can't do anything to save his city in its time of need. And he tries to get out of his wheelchair, but he just falls flat on his face, and Michael Caine kind of goes back to drinking. But the first Tales from the Monster Matador looks at how he got to that place.
Oh, okay.
And it's essentially a pair. It's essentially the night the monsters came, all the movie Batman sort of like heed the call, you know? There's they sort of see a sign, and they all kind of get suited up, and they wind up I don't want to ruin it, but they wind up meeting up on the roof of Nakatomi, and they kind of find out who the one true Dark Knight that will save us all is. And that's available. It's on Amazon, and you can pick it up on monstermatador.com.
Oh, okay. Cool.
It's not on Comixology.
Oh, okay.
For some reason, they won't put it up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we'll just say it's banned by it's the comic that Comixology doesn't want you to read.
Put it up on the, you should put that on the cover. Banned by Comixology.
Banned. So yeah, be one of the cool kids.
Yeah. Well, I read that and I thought it was actually quite funny as well. Let me go back to Monster Matador when you're sort of putting the idea together, were you a fan of that like sort of like Godzilla movie sort of stuff, or are you a fan of like kaiju monsters? Or
I like them. Uh-huh. In the sense that, like, I'll watch, you know, I mean, I love the original Godzilla and the King Kong movies. I've seen them here and there. I'm not like, I don't have a deep knowledge of them, but I like watching them.
Sure.
So my take on monsters, as you'll start to see as they evolve and you kind of see them, isn't necessarily in that vein.
Mm-hmm.
But they're, you know, they're in, they're kind of, but they are like, I guess what you call, is kaiju just a type of, I don't even know what I know the term. I don't even know what kaiju is, but
yeah, I'm not clear on it right now myself, but from what I understand, it means something like giant beast or something like that. I'm not exactly sure. Anybody who's Japanese is feel free to curse at me right now if you're listening. But I mean, it is very much like a sort of thing. Me personally, I mean, I don't have like an index of kaiju monsters like in my brain that I know of, but it is very much a sort of thing that I loved as a kid growing up. And I am sort of excited for this new Godzilla movie coming out.
I liked the first one.
I did not. You should listen to that first episode. That episode, we did an episode on that, it is quite literally the only movie that in my, I don't know how many years of doing this podcast, that I just could not stand. I was so mad at that movie.
Well, I know a lot of people didn't like it because there wasn't enough of the monster in it, I think.
Yes, exactly.
So see, and like, I probably because I'm not coming from it, it reminded me a lot of the old 70s kind of disaster movies, which is more, you know, it's more a lot of people standing around talking.
Yeah.
But I can see how people don't like it. But
Well, you take something like Pacific Rim, which is just like, you know, blows up the whole thing and is like, we're just gonna go crazy. And then you've got like the iconic sort of kaiju, you know, the thing that created it all practically,
right.
You don't see him for half the movie, and I'm like, look, I didn't come here to watch, you know, you guys talk. I came here to watch some monsters blow shit up, you know. Like I'm not here for that, you know what I mean? But the thing that I love about your book, I mean, the focus isn't necessarily on kaiju. By the way, if I forget, you do a bit about chupacabras.
Which is
fantastic.
Yeah. So there's all different types of monsters that pop up.
Yeah. And you do a thing and you introduce something called the supacabra. And I thought that was, as soon as I read that, I was like, how has nobody else thought of this? Like, I just thought that was like fantastic. I was like, this is great. Like, I've never heard of this before. Like that's when I think I was like, okay. I mean, I was on board before that. Like I was like, you know, but then after that I was like, oh, that's just genius. Yeah.
It's funny because a lot of the way I kind of approach it, I tend to be a little improvisational in how I write.
Sure.
And I know that one specifically, I had no idea that was coming.
Oh, really?
When I wrote that, I had written an outline and a script, and it wasn't working. There just wasn't a twist. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't know what the hell I was going to do or how I was going to work it out. And it pretty much just came when I got to that page. I was like, oh, of course, it's the super cover's got to come in there, you know?
Uh-huh. Like,
so that's where that kind of came from, which is, it's a fun way to write because if I'm surprised by it, hopefully the reader is.
Well, talk to me a little bit about writing improvisationally. Like I've never really necessarily heard anybody say that that's kind of what they do. So, how do you sort of, because the thing is like, part of the reason that I mean, I love this book is because it has a sense of humor. It is kind of wacky. It is kind of like out there. I mean, like, look, let's admit a matador in full matador outfit with the sort of, you know, cape and the sword and everything with his little daughter, you know, walking the earth, you know, as they say, you know, fighting kaiju monsters. I mean, that concept in and of itself is just out there.
Yeah.
But I've been a comic fan for so long and seen so many things, you know, that when something like this comes along, it's just like a wonderful surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the way you're writing is obviously sort of like working for what you're doing, but how do you approach like a script like this where you're, you know, or an issue like, what is writing improvisationally? Because that sounds very interesting to me.
That's a good question. Well, I used to take, I used to do improv.
Okay.
A place called Improv Olympics in Chicago. Sure. I think there's one out here.
Yeah, there's probably one out here, I believe.
And it's essentially, you know, generally when I start, I generally know, first thing I do is kind of crack the structure.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, beginning, middle, end. I know where the script starts. I know what the twist is. I know where it's going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so with the Chupacabra one, for instance, what I'll do is I'll start writing. And I think the way that one starts out, I kind of have a scene in my head. And then because I'm drawing it, what I'll start to do, I'll start to sketch out characters.
Mm.
And I know with that one, you know, I started, I went to Orthodox yeshiva growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a religious person. My family is not religious, but I grew up in Brooklyn and at the time the schools were horrible. And
so
I went to Orthodox. So I have a very strong opinions about that stuff, but the Beastie Boys kind of saved my life. You know, they showed me there was a different way for a Jew to live. Right?
Nice, nice.
But anyway, so I started drawing this guy, and you know, and then I and he's walking with this woman who's got like an AK-47, and then I just thought, okay, what's this guy got? And you know, and so I give him a sword and a shield, and on the shield is a Jewish star, and he's dressed, you know, in all black with the black hat.
That was like another thing. I saw the cover of that, and I was like, oh yeah.
And then I'm looking at the character, and I'm going, okay. And his whole shtick is that he's descended from Maccabees, you know. So the improvisational is, a lot of it has to do with kind of like. And I think you were mentioning it too, how a lot of times I'll draw as I'll write.
Sure.
And I'll tend, and the improvisation comes out from that. Sometimes I'll draw something in a scene, or I'll just kind of like, instead of defining the characters in a script, what I'll say is for the new issue of Monster Matador, he goes up against a drug cartel.
Yeah. Okay.
And the opening scene is the Harrison Ford parody is they're flying in the Air Falcon.
Yeah.
which for the listeners who don't know, it's the Airwolf, with the cockpit, the front of the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon on it, which is their helicopter, and he's going home to Mexico, and these cartel guys, like about a dozen of them, they shoot a missile at the helicopter and whatnot. And so in the script, I knew I was going to draw these cartel guys, but I didn't really give them any personalities or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just started drawing them, you know, and mm-hmm. the personalities come out in the art. You know, I've got one guy who's got just like knives for arms. One guy who's got like, he's kind of got like the Wolverine hair, but he's got like a giant bald spot on the top of his head. And he's, you know what I mean? And you just kind of, and from that, you just look at these guys and, you know, their personalities are there. One guy has, he kind of has the Freddie Mercury from the Live Aid kind of look with the, the leather straps on his arms, you know? And it just goes from there. And from there, you just kind of go, the characters just start to kind of come alive, you know?
Yeah. So you would say, do you say that you approach your characters, your sort of story visually from like a visual standpoint?
It's both, you know.
Okay.
But I'll give you an example. I'm doing the next Tales from the Matador with Ryland. Mm-hmm. And I sent Ryland an outline, and Ryland came back and was like, I don't really get this, because my outlines, it's not that I don't get it. It's just my outlines don't have really anything in there. My outlines are basically like, okay, you know, Monster Matador flies a helicopter, you know, he gets shot down, he goes to the cartel, captures him. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
sure.
But what makes the book is all the stuff that happens in between, and the characters and the jokes and everything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of that stuff, it's hard for me to outline that stuff, because it's kind of like you're just kind of feeling it, you know? You kind of feel it out. The same way in improv, you're kind of bouncing off somebody or an idea. Sometimes, you know, the characters will say something in that, I had the head of the drug cartel keeps calling the matador by his full name, you know, so he's Ramon Alejandro Estevez Guerrero, you know, and it becomes this running kind of like joke.
Sure.
Where everything he says, he constantly has to say the entire name, you know, and once you get started like that, it opens up a whole new avenues for the story, you know. So even though I know the structure, I know where the story's going, I kind of allow it to kind of go on these tangents and open up in different ways.
And no,
go
ahead.
Oh, and I say I have a hard time doing that in outline form. I have a really hard time, because it's really, because once you kind of, sometimes, you know, once you kind of like write the joke down or whatever, you know, it kind of loses its
punch.
Its punch if you have to go and write it again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It's interesting to me because obviously it sounds like you're very much into comedy. I mean, you like comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, besides say, but this isn't like, you had said earlier that you really like the Three Stooges, but I don't get a lot of sort of, I'm not necessarily a Three Stooges fan. I just always thought they were really mean. I was always like a Laurel and Hardy sort of guy or Abbott and Costello.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of slapstick in this,
but there's
a lot of humor, like, and so what are some of your comedic influences? Like, where do you sort of pull from? Because the thing that I'm thinking a lot is of like the old George Hamilton movies a little bit, like Love at First Bite you know, and obviously something like Zorro the Gay Blade is not politically correct, but you know, when I was a kid, it was funny. This is the sort of thing that you're sort of talking about. And, and you know, saying the full name Airplane, like that sort of thing. I don't know. Do you call it farcical? I guess
it's farcical. It's melodramatic. I mean, I think I mentioned it before, but I mean, Peter Sellers is, you know.
That's right.
Is probably the biggest. The thing about Peter Sellers and what I think makes his work so effective is that he doesn't look down on the characters he plays. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at Inspector Clouseau, who's just this buffoon, you know?
Yeah.
But he plays him, he doesn't play down to him, you know what I mean? He respects the character, you know? He doesn't play it like a comedy, you know?
Yeah.
He just plays like, this is who this guy is, and this is what he does, and all this chaos happens around him, you know?
Sure.
And in a lot of ways, you know, the way the Matador in this is probably, you know, he's very kind of serious and macho and, you know, yeah, dramatic. He doesn't say much. And yet, but the world around him is pretty insane.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's where a lot of the humor comes from. It's the situations where it's this crazy situation. And then there's this guy, I mean, there's, like you said before, there's a guy, you know, full on matador with his cape, and he's just standing there as this giant monster is growling, and he's just got like his cape in front of him and his sword behind his back. And he's just like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, in a way, it reminds me a little bit of like the Adam West Batman, where like that dude's in a bat suit and he's taking this like very seriously.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where the humor kind of arises from. It's sort of like if you look at the Christian Bale Batman movies and you skew it in a certain, it kind of becomes funny too, because he's talking like this.
No.
And everyone's like, yeah, and everyone's kind of like taking him seriously. And I'm like, I can't, like, if you're going to talk to me that way, I can't take you seriously. You know what I mean? Like, we can't have a serious conversation, Batman. Yeah, exactly. It's very.
I mean, those are all things. I mean, the Adam West Batman is when that came out recently, a few years ago on Blu-ray, and I was watching it again. And the first episode,
so good.
It's brilliant because, as you said, he takes it so seriously, but he adds, you know, these little touches. You know, when he stands, he kind of crosses his arms like a bat.
Yeah.
You know, there's all these little things, these subtle little things that he does that it's clear that he takes it seriously, but it's a crazy world, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone is nuts, but, you know, they're all, but none of them see it that way. That's just their reality, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's one of the things that I love about this book is that he's very, and when he talks in sort of like, it's almost like he like quotes out of a book or something, like, you know, like, this is what the superhero would say, you know what I'm saying? It's very, that's what I like about it is like, other people are like, oh my God, you know, the shit's going to hit the fan. And he's just like, yeah, you know, superhero quote or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, and it's just, it plays really well.
Yeah.
The thing that I wanted to ask you about is, you had said earlier that you didn't necessarily draw, or you had given up drawing, or you'd moved away. Talk to me a little bit about like sort of approaching the book from that aspect, because there are a lot of artists, myself included, who, you know, I mean, to have faith in sort of your own talent to like be like, I'm going to draw a comic. And then you said you drew a 200 page book. you know, like, how did you approach it? Because I mean, obviously as you go on, you get better, but there's sort of a, like, if you were like, did you ever think of like finding an artist, or were you just like, I'm just going to draw this myself and I don't care, you know, I'm just going to draw it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I did the, like I said, I was laid off, so I had time.
Sure.
And like I said, when I did the science fiction, that graphic novel, the third, I didn't expect to finish it. I didn't expect to do it. It was more just one of those things where it's like, okay, I'll give it the old college try.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can be like, okay, you know, it's not going to happen. And then I can kind of, you know, sleep at night, you know, like, I mean, you know, as an artist or a writer, when you have ideas and you kind of just want to get them out there, they kind of nag at you. And I just,
I just
wanted to get it to stop nagging me, you know?
Yeah, but obviously you have something in you that you completed it. Like, you didn't go back and second guess yourself, you know, like a lot of, like me particularly, like, you know, you mentioned David Schrader, and the reason that I'm not, that I never completed the art on Baby Badass is because there is I'm the first to admit it. There's a bit of like self-loathing in me where I'm like, that's never good enough. You know what I mean?
I mean,
I'm the first person that's going to turn around and draw a comic page and just rip it up and be like, no, not good. And my wife's like yelling at me like, why did you rip that up? You know what I mean? And I'm like, it just, you know, so like for you, you obviously have something in you where you're just like, I'm committed to this. Like, I'm going to move forward. And I think that there's a lot of people that would benefit from like your viewpoint as to like moving on and being able to complete something.
Am I making any
kind of sense?
Yeah, no, that's inspiring.
I want your secret.
You know, it's just like, I think if you want to be a writer, if you want to be an artist, if you want to be a creative person, okay, you have to finish what you start.
Sure.
You're not going to, if you want to be a writer, you have to finish what you start. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things when I was drawing, when I started drawing that graphic novel, so I had done this comic strip Unemployant. Okay. And I was doing, I did 5 strips a day.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, just like hardcore, you know, and I started to notice myself kind of getting better. You know, I was getting, when I did the science fiction graphic novel, when I did the third, I just started doing it, and it just became like, it became a challenge. Every page was a challenge. Okay. I don't really care. I know the art in that book is not great, you know?
Mm-hmm. In which book?
In the third.
Okay.
I mean, it's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine. I'm proud of it, but to me, I don't really care what anyone thinks.
Sure.
You know, and ultimately that's what it boils down to. You know, you go on the internet and I don't care what artist, popular or not, there's always going to be a message board or whatever and say, oh, these guys suck or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, who's the guy that gets crapped on all the time? Rob Liefeld, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's had a career for what, like 20, 30 years now. Regardless of what you think of his art, you think he sits at home and goes, oh man, this page sucks. Even though half the internet tells him that, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You know, it really doesn't matter. And you know, to me, it was kind of like, I was kind of intrigued. It was just fun to get to draw again, you know?
Yeah.
And I was kind of intrigued to see where it would go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of it to me was just a challenge of like, okay, like, can I actually do this? After a certain point, it just became the challenge of like, you know, can I do this? And like I said, I'm very much, a very, very strongly believe that, you know, if you have to finish what you start.
Okay.
I think that it's the only way to grow. It's the only way to get better, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's the only way to really get anywhere. I mean,
yeah.
So by the time I finished that, I was comfortable enough with where I was drawing that I was like, okay, I think I can do Monster Matador now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I originally was inking it with a brush, which is what I prefer to do.
Yeah. Wow. You're hardcore.
Yeah. But what I found over time is just, with kids, I just don't have time to do it. So I've been constantly refining my process to mm-hmm. kind of speed up. And, I go from full pencils now.
Okay.
I do really, really tight pencils.
Yeah.
I only have a couple hours a day really to like draw.
Yep, I hear you.
What I do is I do a page of blue lines a day is what optimal, you know,
mm-hmm.
Which is what I finally got back to now. So I do a page of blue line pencils, which are essentially it's basically penciling a page, but with a blue pencil that you can remove digital in Photoshop.
Yeah. Yeah, scanners won't pick it up. Photocopiers won't pick it. It's blue line.
It's called blue line.
What animators used to use. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, I never used them because I don't know why it never occurred to me, but I came across I didn't know you could get mechanical LEDs for the blue lines.
Oh.
because usually I've only seen the regular pencils, which are kind of like softer leads, which you can't really get like a fine line with and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I ordered like a whole bunch. I guess I had to order them from Japan or something.
Oh, really? I was thinking about doing that too, because do you sort of get the darker lines? Because there's the erasable like blue line, and that goes on like really light, and then you've got the non-erasable, and they go on sort of like with a heavy blue. Do the LEDs sort of go on with a heavy blue or a light blue?
It's kind of like in between.
Oh, okay.
And they erase really well. I mean, it's great because I'll do a page with those, and then the next day what I'll do is I'll actually pencil the page.
Okay.
And that's how I get. So that's how I get everything.
So now you're sort of, and you know, the other artists do this as well. The creator of the book Amulet, who I've had on the podcast a uh-huh. couple of times,
yeah.
he basically does everything in pencils originally. And then,
right.
you know, obviously they color like in Photoshop and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And that was sort of my own stubbornness on my own part, is like, no, I want to ink it. Like, I want to ink it. Like, mm-hmm. I need to ink it. But I'm sort of coming around to that way of thinking of like, maybe, you know, when I begin the next chapter of whatever, you know, what I'm doing, that I may just go to like just full pencils.
Yeah. I mean, you can, I mean, with Photoshop and stuff like that, it's you know, upping the resolution and stuff. It looks pretty good, but it's basically, I just don't have the time to ink. The last issue I inked, I think, was number 7. And, I found myself like, when I ink, it actually takes me longer to ink than to pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's just, you just have to be so careful and focused and whatever. And on top of that, it's, you know, cleaning the brush takes me like half an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, I have to factor that in, and, you know, and usually with pencils, I can do some pencils, and then I can go back, you know, if I'm walking up the stairs, you know, pencil for like 10 minutes and then go do something else. Whereas inking, I find I've got to just like sit down and ink, you know?
Yeah.
I can't really have distractions.
No. Well, that's why I kind of started inking digitally, because mm-hmm. you can't, well, I was never good at a brush.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, brush pens are cool and they help me out a lot, but there is a fineness of line that I can't do inking on okay. my own. And then also, like, you know, taking all your supplies with you, like a lot of times I'll work at lunch,
yeah.
you know, and stuff like that. So digitally, it's like, if I have my laptop and mm-hmm. I just break it out, like I can just do that like really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you, do you work digitally at all? And
yeah,
like, what are some of the things, like once you decided to make your own comic,
mm-hmm.
like that you were going to make it yourself, did you have to teach yourself like Photoshop? Like, what were the sort of steps and the education that you learned like on the way?
Okay. So digital, I actually did, issue number 5 is completely digital.
Oh, okay.
I drew that digitally.
In Photoshop?
In Photoshop.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So that one I did. And that again, you know, it's just time. It's setting up my computer each time, you know.
I
just like drawing on paper.
Yeah, as do I. Uh-huh.
But as far as but I do touch-ups digitally. I do some of the stuff on digital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Photoshop, I taught myself Photoshop in college. I used to be in advertising. I used to be a copywriter.
Oh, gotcha.
And we had to, in as part of the advanced or whatever course that I was in, we had to do our own ads.
Uh-huh.
So we basically had to teach ourselves Photoshop. I think Quark Express was the layout program at
Quark,
the time.
Quark, yeah, yeah,
which
yeah.
No one really uses that anymore.
No.
This is before InDesign. Illustrator, I'm not that familiar with. Later on, I worked at a toy company. I moved into marketing and product development, and I managed team artists, the freelance artists that that worked for us. And I wound up teaching myself even more Photoshop because it was sometimes a pain getting them to get the work done on deadline.
Sure.
So I just, I would just do it myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was interesting working with artists from, you know, from, in that regard, because, you know, they would kind of give me the typical excuses or, you know, this is going to take 3 hours. And it's like, no, it's going to take 10 minutes and I'm going to do it in 10 minutes and you're not going to make your whatever $300. So,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, they'd be like, oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
We'll get it for you.
Cracking
you know?
The whip.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because if you don't understand the process, if you're not an artist, if you don't, it's pretty easy to kind of, I think to a lot of people, it's sort of alchemical. It's a magic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sort
yeah.
Of.
Yeah.
You
absolutely.
Say, you say Photoshop and it's like, oh, but it's, you know, once you, it's, there's obviously, you know, different layers of complexity to Photoshop, but
yeah.
But in terms
I keep trying to tell, teach Dave Photoshop and he won't let me do it.
Oh, really?
He's like, I've got enough stuff to do. And I'm like, Dave, I can teach you Photoshop. I can come over one afternoon and we can get the big, no, I don't have time. There's no time. I'm
yeah,
like,
it's okay, pretty, whatever. Photoshop is, it's pretty intuitive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Illustrators yeah. Is difficult.
Illustrator's gotten much better. I actually used to hate it and I love it now.
Okay.
I love it particularly for like drawing cartoons and stuff like that. Although I've moved over to like Clip Art Studio or Clip Studio. It used to be Manga Studio.
Oh, Manga. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's what I've been using lately. But yeah, I liked it. I started like lettering sort of like an illustrator, and you know, that sort of was the breakthrough that I needed
because cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, so let me ask you one last question
sure.
Because I've had you on for an hour and I know you've got some kids to get back to and they're going to be like, Father, why did you neglect me that one time? And
I can't believe my three-year-old hasn't run downstairs. I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to write. That's what I do now.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
I usually head out to Starbucks, but sometimes I'll stay here and,
yeah.
And every now and then he'll run into our room and I'll hear him. He'll go to my wife. He'll wake her up and go, Dada's home. Dada's home. And my wife be like, no, he's not coming back to bed. And he'll be like, no, Dada's. And he'll run downstairs and he'll go, daddy. And I'm just like,
oh no. God. Yeah, no, I know. Like, yeah. I've been through it. So
yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
I know. My daughter's 12 now. And so yeah, we're growing out of all that stuff. But it's funny because we were watching a stand-up routine from Seinfeld like a while ago.
Yeah.
And he's like, you thought you were done with high school. You thought you were done with middle school. But no, you have a kid and you're basically reliving it all over again. And
right.
I was like,
yeah,
wow, he nailed it. Like, yeah, I was like, we're trying to help her get the homework get done, you know,
right,
get the assignments done on time.
Right.
Like me, you know. But but my last question is, you had sort of mentioned earlier that you had given up on comics a while ago, but it was Paul Pope that was one of the artists or creators that brought you back in. Which Paul Pope book was it? Because I love Paul Pope. I'm just wondering, what was it that you read of his that sort of made you go, damn, like I got to get back into comics or stuff like that?
Yeah, well, it was, I never stopped following Paul, but it was 100%.
Oh, yeah. That's a great book.
That book to me is the book where kind of Paul Pope became Paul Pope, you know,
uh-huh.
You'd always been kind of working to that, but what you think of as the Paul Pope style,
mm-hmm,
kind of, you know, fully matured and blossomed in that,
yeah,
book and his writing in that book, everything. At the time too, you know, I think I mentioned, I'm a big fan of, Alejandro Jodorowsky and
yeah,
Humanoids was publishing the Meta Barons.
Yep. Do you have that giant omnibus thing?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I have it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the Inkle and Enki Bilal stuff was being translated and published, uh-huh, here. You know, I mean, I really love a lot of those old heavy metal guys. And
yeah,
that kind of really
yeah,
brought me back in and
yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
European stuff just blows my hair back.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh man, you guys are doing some amazing things over there.
Yeah, there's
the
there's
French.
A, Yeah. I was like, say, have you heard of Lone Sloan?
No.
I don't know how to pronounce it. Philippe Drouet. It's a book called Lone Sloan. Check it out. It's insane. It's just the drawing. I don't even know how to describe it, but it's
really. I'm a big fan of an artist, and he's sort of more on the like cartoony end.
Mm-hmm.
And I buy like all his books. I get them from overseas and stuff.
Yeah.
Like Amazon UK. Pierre Allery. I'm not sure that I pronounced that correctly, but the guy is a master with the brush. Like his stuff is amazing. And I buy all the books, and I actually really need to learn French, because I've actually been sitting and trying to like translate some of the graphic novels using Google Translate.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I speak French. I speak a little French. I grew up my parents, and I used to buy, I used to buy those books in French because you couldn't get them, you know?
My
French is not good. I mean, I can kind of like figure it out, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
He hasn't been translated here? Or?
No, he did like a Marvel thing, like a Spider-Man story once.
Okay.
But his French stuff has not been translated to my knowledge, but I just love his stuff, the energy of his work and stuff like that. Just blows my mind. Actually, I follow him on Facebook. I should send him an email and maybe I could get an interview, but who knows? Yeah. I don't know. But I'm with you. I love the European stuff. I love what you're talking about, like the very complex stuff. Mm-hmm. But there is something with the French books and, you know, European cartooning that they're just, you know, something about America just doesn't embrace that style too much. And, I don't know why, but mm-hmm. I love it. I just absolutely love it.
Like the Asterix type of stuff. Or...
Yeah. 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 My sister went to school in Europe, mm-hmm. During high school, and she had mentioned Asterix, and I knew that, you know, I knew that was like super popular in Europe, but I'd never read any of it. And I just recently found like one of the sort of like English versions of it in a used bookstore. And I picked it up and I was like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, this, I need to read this and want to look at it, because apparently it was like huge.
I think it's the biggest selling, graphic novel in the world or whatever. Every time come out. I think the print runs are like 1 million, 2 million copies or something.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Stephen, I really appreciate you coming on to my podcast. I love your book, Monster Matador. Everyone should check it out. Where can people find Monster Matador?
You can find it on comixology.com mm-hmm. except for Tales from the World of Monster Matador.
Banned on Comixology.
You can find it on monstermatador.com, and Comixology doesn't let me do free books, but monstermatador.com, you can download. There's a couple of issues on there that are free for download if you just want to check it out. And then there's some on Amazon.com too.
And are you selling the print versions online as well? Or?
Yeah, there's limited amounts of print versions online that you can buy, and I'll ship them out to you quick. I promise.
Yeah. The kids won't get in the way.
Yeah.
On your way to Starbucks in the morning.
Yeah. I mean, I've set it up so it's kind of like, it's a certain amount at a time. So, so I don't get like, you know, not like getting overwhelmed with orders, but it's not going to be.
That's great. No. Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on, Stephen. I really appreciate it. Once again, the name is Stephen Prince.
Right.
And the book is Monster Matador. I love this book. I think it's a ton of fun. I think everyone should check it out. You know, it's just different from anything else on the stands, and it's deserving of a wider audience. I'm with Ryland Grant. He recommended it to me, and I was like, I mean, I wasn't skeptical because obviously he's got good taste, but I was like, okay, yeah, I'll check it out. And, you know, I started reading it, and, you know, at first I was like, okay, what is this? And then, as it went on, I just fell in love with it. It's that sort of thing that, you know, that it's just so original and so different that it's very welcome. It's a very welcome read.
Thanks.
So,
it's funny because a number of people have kind of just described it in that way where they're like, I don't really know what to think of it. And then they'll read it and they'll be like, oh, okay. Now,
yeah, know. I get it. I get it.
It's tricky because it's difficult to describe humor, yeah. You know?
Sure. Absolutely.
But yeah, so.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so funny because we mentioned George Hamilton before, and now I picture him playing somebody like him being
with
the lead
with
role.
With the tan and the thing.
Yeah, the tan and everything. That's great. Cool. All right. Stephen Prince, Monster Matador. My name is Christian Horn. This has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you as always for listening, and we will be back sooner than last time with another episode. Bye.
Bye.